Welcome to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome the very talented music educator, Maggie Malone. Maggie is the superintendent of the West Michigan Academy of Arts and Academics. In her storied career, she has taught band in public schools, started an adult choir, and has been a champion of community-based music groups. Please join us as we talk about this and much, much more. Hey, before we begin, please take a moment and hit that like and subscribe button down there. I'm trying to convince the algorithm that you folks actually exist. And we are welcoming to the show Maggie Malone. Hey, Maggie, how you doing?
Hey, Roger, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for this opportunity.
Hey, I've been looking forward to it. I've been trying to nail your feet to the floor for a while now, so.
That's true.
You're a busy woman.
Yeah. Try to stay busy and try to keep giving back. You know how it is. You do the same thing.
I do. Yeah. I figure sooner or later the Lord's going to come and call on me, and He's going to have to catch me first. So
that's corrections out.
So you are the director of, correct me if I've got this, if I get this wrong, the West Michigan Arts and Academics Academy.
Very close. I'm actually the superintendent head of schools for the West Michigan Academy of Arts and Academics. Yeah.
Close, but no cigar. So having said all of that, so what is this academy about? This is a K-8, is that right?
Yes, we're a K-8 and we are a school that focuses on arts integration. So we value education, our core subjects like math and reading, but we also value all of the arts. And we provide instruction in theater, dance, vocal music, instrumental music, and theater to all of our students K-8. And then we also integrate arts into the core into the arts, and then arts into other arts.
Wow. Well, you know, I can see how the arts would squeeze into like a history class, but how does it squeeze into like a math class or an English class?
Well, music and math have a lot of overlap. So when you look at something, for example, like a time signature, you have a top number and a bottom number, which is very similar to a fraction. And so for me, when I was teaching music and teaching at a STEM school, I would integrate and focus on those connections. So, you know, the top number of a time signature tells you what? It tells you how many beats are in a measure. What's the top number of a fraction called? It's called the numerator. So where there are logical connections, just pointing those out, because research tells us that learning is best when it's authentic, when it's an area that students are interested in. And if you have an art school, then kids are probably going to be interested in arts. And so that's just another way to really help use arts to help them not only continue their love of the arts, but to help them learn other areas in core academics that they may be struggling in.
So this is a private school?
It sounds like a private school, but we're actually a public school academy. So we are tuition free.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool. And you're located on the western part of Michigan. So what school district would you be in? What children would be available to come to you?
Sure. We're in Spring Lake, and which is on the west side, like you mentioned. So we're really close to Grand Haven and Muskegon. Those are some of our border districts, and Fruitport. We are a public school academy, so we're actually a one building school district. So we have students that come from those particular areas, but also further, we have some students that come from Holland, and some come from other areas like Twin Lakes. So some parents are driving their students quite a distance to bring them to us for them to be able to have this unique opportunity.
Okay. How big is your enrollment approximately?
We're approximately, this year, we're at approximately 400.
That's a nice number there. So I know that two of my grandkids went to high school on Mackinac Island, and so 400 is much bigger than that number
Yeah,
there.
we go to Mackinac Island every summer and we always go by the school and check it out.
Now, the kids there get to do something that your kids don't get to do, I'm assuming, and that is they get to ride their snowmobiles to school in the wintertime. So
Yeah, well, we can't do everything, though.
so you're doing music. So you're working with young children, like kindergarten, first grade. Are you doing like music in motion and those kinds of programs? Is that what you're talking about?
No, we're not doing that program. Our elementary students, the younger students, have music twice a week. So they go and we do a traditional general music curriculum. So looking at, pedagogies like Orff, Kodály, Gordon, and then focusing one of the music teachers at the elementary level will provide that instruction and they'll have a vocal focus. So they'll focus more on tone production, pitch matching, those kinds of things, also integrating movement because we know that's also best for the kids that are at that age. And then the other music teacher also teaches general music, but they do more of an instrumental focus. So they'll be using things in addition like hand percussion, so tambourines, maracas, hand drums, Orff instruments. Not my favorite, but boom whacker.
But what was the last one?
Boom whackers.
Oh.
Yeah, boom whackers are like a really cool tool. Have you seen them? They're like these plastic tubes and they're pitched. And so you bang them on the floor and they produce a sound.
Oh.
Yeah, as
I
someone
can
with.
see where that would get real tiresome for an adult.
Yeah, and I mean, they're fun. They're a really fun activity. But if you're trying to do a performance, sometimes the pitch isn't always true, which, if you're someone with perfect or relative pitch, it can be a little bit frustrating because it's close to that, but not 100. But they're really a great learning tool for students.
So now, do the traditional thing with the recorders.
Yes, we use recorders also. Michigan curriculum has that as a component in grade 4. So we do use recorders. We do them younger than fourth grade, but continue them into that grade level. Also use a lot of ukuleles, which has been really fun and interesting. So kind of like guitar, which as you're my former guitar teacher, I wanted to mention that. So we do have classes of ukulele too, and also class piano.
You know, take a sidestep into that. I see before me this very well-educated, very professional educator, and in my mind, I see this little 10-year-old girl with a 12-string guitar that was as big as she was, and still able to play it. I want to get that out there to people that you were able to play full-on bar chords on that thing.
I was 8.
You were 8? Is that how old you were?
I started lessons with you when I was 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That was a minute ago.
Yeah, it sure was. But man, those were some good times. I really feel like you are the one that really got me started in music. I remember you requiring me to learn how to read, and I just play a song. And then you had to learn all my major and minor scales. You had me doing intervals, chromatic scale, learning all the different chords, including those bar chords.
That everybody loves, right?
Yes. Oh my God, they're hard, especially when you're young and you
Yeah.
don't have a lot of hand strength yet. Yeah,
So
but you finally play songs, so it was good.
you played very well. So
Well, thank you.
now you don't know this, of course, but I started teaching ukulele a few years ago and actually have written a couple of courses.
I did
So
not know that.
including I'll plug myself here if I have a course that's available for not a lot of money on my website, and it involves it's a self-study thing, and it's written primarily for adults,
Oh.
for who have never had music, And it's just chords and strumming, you know, simple folk songs. But for free on my website, there is actually a book that I wrote on how to read notes for ukulele.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, and that's a freebie. You can go there and check her out anytime you want.
Well,
So.
I will tell my friends.
So thank you. Got one for that and one for the guitar as well. Lord, I never was happy with the guitar method books that were available for young kids. You were eight. I had kids coming to me who were six. And honestly, the first couple of them, I failed them miserably. I told their parents I probably would. And I said, if this doesn't work, blame me, not them. Because I had never taught anybody that young before. But I got into one of these books, and you were talking time signatures a moment ago. And I can remember looking at this little six-year-old, and I'm saying, okay, this is a quarter note, and it gets one beat, okay? And he goes, and he nods his head, you know. And I said, okay, so this is a half note. How many do you think this would get? And he shrugged his shoulders, you know. And so it occurred to me that this kid hadn't had fractions yet. He had no concept.
Right.
At 6 years old, a six-year-old will look you straight in the eye and say, I gave half to my mom, half to my dad, and I kept the other half for myself. And that makes sense when you're six. And so I thought, okay, I'm in trouble now, you know. And then I saw the books that they had written for very young children. And quite frankly, it was the same material, except they just put some cool cartoons in it. But it really, honestly, wasn't written very well at all for young children. So I started writing method books, back in the 80s. And it wasn't because I wanted to or I thought that I was all that smart. It was just out of pure desperation. I still continue to do stuff like that. And we'll talk more about that later. I started teaching ukulele a few years ago. And then during the pandemic, I started working with kids online because they were stuck inside. They needed something to do. So I did that. So, yeah, to be fair, and a little truth in advertising here, I kind of looked down my nose at that instrument initially. And I've kind of come around to the idea that it's a real instrument. It can be as complex as you want it to be. And you can do some very nice musical stuff with it. In addition to being able to strum it and you can, you know, play as complicated a chord on that as you can on a guitar. It has its limitations. My preference still is a guitar, I see no reason for someone to start off on a ukulele and then switch to something else. They could stay with that, you know, depending on what their own musical goals are. So I think it's wonderful that you're doing that.
Well, thank you. I've learned to have a similar appreciation for the recorder.
Yes.
And, you know, they make really nice recorders and wooden recorders. And when I was teaching general music, I got more involved in that. And got a really beautiful rosewood wooden recorder and found more complicated music and also started working with students on voicing and because they have different levels, kind of like, you know, a ukulele is small and guitar is bigger.
Soprano, alto, tenor, and that's right.
Yeah. So, started writing music for the group, you know, as it was built. Because, you know, sometimes teaching, you have to like build a plane in the air. Like, who do you have? What are they interested in? What are they good at? Let me write this arrangement for them.
Yes. I went and saw a classical guitarist, a Japanese guy, Kazuhito Yamashita. And he was touring with a recorder player named Akala Petri. And I don't know if you know that name or not, but she is astonishing. And they did an entire concert of guitar and recorder and a lot of Renaissance and Baroque music, as you well imagine. But there were a few pieces that were, including one that she played as a solo, that was written specifically for her. She's commissioning works for the recorder.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And if you go, you know, like in the University of YouTube, yay, You go on there and you look at some of these amazing Renaissance groups and Baroque groups that are playing, and you see some of these recorder players, and it's just, you get so far beyond that, the plastic recorder trying to play hot cross buns, and you get into the real stuff and you realize this is a serious instrument that has a very cool sound.
Yeah, it really does.
Now
Love it.
I'm gonna hit you with another jaw dropper that you did not know. Years and years and years ago, when I was still in the military, I got myself into a little band, doing vocals, kind of a pop music band, but we decided we wanted to do something different. And so the band, it was a 5-piece band, and we had myself on a 12-string guitar, a 6-string guitar player, a bass player, a drummer, and a guy who played jazz on a tenor recorder.
Wow. That's pretty cool. And
Yeah, it
it
was.
doesn't need a reed.
See, it was. Yeah.
As someone who that was my area, reeds are temperamental. A recorder starts up every time.
So now you went on to become a clarinetist, and you were were you a band director in the Lansing area for a while? Am I remembering that right?
Yes. I was clarinet. I was a my specialty was E flat clarinet. I played on some recordings, and one is to the four, the Percy Grainger album with the Wind Symphony at Michigan State.
Okay.
And so I did all the E flat work, and when there's not an E flat, I'm playing first principal clarinet on that. And yes, and then I did go on to be a band director. I was a band director in Lansing for about 17 years, and that was really fun. I've had the opportunity to have a lot of really cool jobs and do a lot of really awesome things and meet a lot of really amazing people that have had a really positive impact on my life. You know, when you work with young kids and you get to help them kind of find out who they are and you know, help them through music or whatever your content is. That's just really rewarding. I think that teaching is the most important work that you can do, whether you're teaching guitar or math or science or physical education. I just think that really being a good role model and engaging with youth and helping them is the highest evolution of what we can do as humans.
I agree. I think that teaching any subject, but I think the entire profession, any civilization is built on that. That is definitely a cornerstone of your civilization, historically, any place in history. So we remember teachers, we remember artists far more than we remember a lot of the other people. So yeah, I agree. I've been a teacher now. I started teaching guitar for money in 1968.
Wow.
I've been doing this a
Minute. I really
minute.
think you're a great example too of just how to evolve, right? Because you've done so many different things and you've had the opportunity to travel and to bring things back and then take what you've learned and utilize it in a different way. And I just look up to you for that. And I've been trying to do the same thing myself in my own way.
Thank you. So yeah, so apparently I infected you early.
Scales.
I'm sorry, say again.
It must have been the scales.
Must have been those dreaded scales. It's interesting because when I teach to this day, one of the first things that I teach a child, and we do things by rote initially, and then I get into note reading. And one of the first things that I teach them is a chromatic scale on the guitar. And I do that for a variety of reasons. So I want them to understand, I just want them to have a sense of musical direction and how these things are connected and just get a sense of half steps and whole steps. Even though we don't identify them, they just can hear them. It's just to internalize that sound and that feel. But the other thing that I do by doing that is that they get used to the idea of using the little finger on the left hand. For most of us, that's the weakest finger, the weakest hand. And I learned as a child that that was my best friend. I could really jazz up my guitar playing, my chord playing, just by being able to do a few things with my pinky. And so I do that, and now the kids, none of them ever complain about or even try to shy away from using the little finger when we're doing things. They just do it because that's how the guitar is played. You take somebody who just plays the first three fingers for the first 6 months, trying to get them to use a pinky is just miserable. It's terrible.
When I taught band, I would teach similarly. I would start with the extender and I would say, okay, open up your book to the back page, and you know, and then we would talk about it and, you know, explain, hey, this is a fingering chart, but this is also your extended chromatic scale. And then over the course of the year, we would talk about like what the right fingering was and how you in a scale you need to go evenly up. And then if you go up, you must come down. And I would buy these, I found these blow pops, but they were a whistle. Oh. And so slide in the stem or the whatever that.
Yes, we'll call it a stem.
Thank you. But it would slide out like a trombone, and it had little positions on it so you could play a song with it. Oh. And so I would use that as a reward for kids in their first year. I would say, okay, so every Friday I'm going to ask if you're ready for the challenge. And then chromatic scale, and they would have to go all the way up and all the way down evenly. And then they could get this cool whistle pop. And it worked. Kids loved it, but the same concept. It got them with hand position where they were used to using all their fingers. They were used to also going through the range of their instruments, because on wind instruments, it's a particular challenge if you're only playing in a portion of the register that the instrument has capacity to be able to push beyond that to be able to really extend and play the full range of your instrument.
So at the Academy, are you doing a full range of band instruments as well, Beth?
We do have band, yes. And the band teacher is working with them. Kids have the opportunity at West Michigan Academy of Arts and Academics to explore band as early as fourth grade.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. They get to try it for one marking period. And then in fifth grade, they get the opportunity to take a couple different ones for a longer period of time. And they choose their arts major. And so in the fifth grade, they choose their major. And then in seventh grade, they focus on that major, but they also have the opportunity to participate in the other forms of art as well.
So choir then as well, if you got voice?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I'm a big choir geek from way back.
I have something to tell you that I don't think you know about me, Roger.
Okay.
I actually started a vocal group.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so when I was working for the Grand Rapids Public Schools, we had a request for a vocal group to perform. The call time was like 5 a.m. From a local television station. And I just told them, I said, hey, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to get kids, but I could get some adults for you. Would that be okay? And they said yes. And I got some singers together and we sang on television for the holidays. It was like, you know, holiday songs. Uh-huh. And sang, and they just were, oh, you're so great. You got to come back next year. And so it started for that reason, but it evolved into this really amazing opportunity and bonding that's really hard to articulate in words. We took all these different people who supported the arts, they supported music, they were educational supporters. Many of them worked for the Grand Rapids Public Schools as well, and just came together and sang. And we would go to the children's hospital and sing. And then we just kind of grew together. We would have guest artists come in and conduct us. We did a really phenomenal Black History concert one year at the Listening Room. And it turned into this fellowship of, you know, sometimes people are working in a job where they're out of town or they don't know very many people. They're new in the area. It kind of became this support group for people and this camaraderie and this special bond. And it also became professional development for the people that were in the room, because I feel like, you know, you go to a training and you read a book and you do these things, but as artists, as working, functioning musicians, there's nothing like part of being in an ensemble.
Right.
And having someone rehearse you. And there's something in our evolution of musicians, for many of us that are, you know, not playing in a symphony, where you're out of the habit of performing with others at a high level and being instructed and having someone push back on you, know you're flat. Hey, need your vowel sound to be taller. I need, you know, and running through those, having someone run you through those paces that we all did when we were really building our craft and learning and honing and focusing and listening and developing our ears. And so the byproduct of that was that piece of it. So a really tight knit group that felt very connected. We had a lot of interviews on television and radio. And then before COVID, there was a period where we were getting 3 to 5 media hits a week.
Wow.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we really did some stuff. And I'm really proud of that, proud of that group. We've got some EPs out. We've got some videos that we did. And it was just really a phenomenal experience to be with them. And yeah, it was great. And
is the group still together?
The group kind of fell apart when I left. And they're just starting to bring it back now.
So yeah, COVID just kind of killed a lot of things too. It was just a lot of stuff like that just kind of died on the vine, unfortunately, because of COVID. But you know, I play chamber music for that same reason, right? I was even in a trio for a while with guitar, flute, and clarinet.
Oh, nice.
And it was really cool. And one of the nice things for me, to go along with what you were saying, is that for a change, I'm not the smartest or most talented guy in the room. You know, there are other people there that are smarter than me and more talented than me and are kicking me in the slats and making me work at it, you know, and it's a nice feeling, you know, to be with people who, because you improve by playing with people who are better than you.
Absolutely.
You know, and as a classical guitarist and as a soloist, chamber music is a whole different experience for me. And mm-hmm. and learning, if I play duets with a student, I'm looking at my part and I'm kind of worried about their part too. And so when I'm sitting down with a professional musician, I have to stop worrying about whether or not they know how to play the notes, and I just have to take care of me and hold up my end. So it's a whole different, for me, it was a whole different approach to music. And so that was, it was cool. We made some pretty cool music that way. And I enjoyed it. But yeah, I think the idea of not being the director, not yes. being the teacher, and not being the smartest and the most, you know, the most educated or musically educated person in the room. Boy, oh boy, you got to be on your toes all of a sudden. You can't call it in.
That is true. And it's just, yeah. And in that group too, while I was the leader of the group, we had shared leadership, you know, so also allowing people to grow and to develop in that way as well. And then taking some of those people and presenting at state conferences, the Michigan Music Conference, and sharing different ideas and doing that too. So we're also taking where we were learning and sharing that out. And in my new job, we're doing the same thing with arts integration. And so just really great. It's great to have had a lot of experiences to be able to be at this point and to bring them to another place and another organization where I can share that part of myself with the staff and, you know, help the positively impact that culture with a lifetime of arts experience to bring that to the school and to really, you know, be part of another great adventure at West Michigan Academy.
I am a big fan of community music, anything. I think that when people leave high school or college, College, for example, a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of the marching bands are not music majors. The music majors have other stuff they have to work on. So the marching band is made up of the kids who played in marching band in high school, and it just kind of moved on over. And so, but they graduate out, and the saddest thing I ever hear is, I graduated from school and I stuck my flute in my parents' closet and I haven't seen it since. And it just breaks my heart, to hear things like that. And the idea of having community orchestras or community bands, I think is marvelous to begin with. And then also, I mean, at least at churches, a lot of church choirs, if you're a choir geek, like I was when I was in high school, you can sing in a church choir and I'd like to see community choirs come back. That's a personal thing with me,
I'm in one right now.
I think it's marvelous. I absolutely think that's astonishing. And I am so supportive of that kind of thing. You know, part of the podcast is, I'm always, introducing people to, new music, composers and performers that you may not be aware of in the classical field, but who are nevertheless very, very good and very accomplished and most of the time award-winning. But I also think that it's important for the people who just, the computer programmers and truck drivers and people who work at the grocery store to be able to get out and knock the dust off that clarinet, put a new reed in it, and sit down with other people or get together and sing. So now you say you're in one now. Is that a band or a choir that you're in?
It's a community choir.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we get together on four rehearsals, and it's just a community group. Whoever comes together, it's for the MLK community chorus. So we come together for the purpose of celebrating Dr. Martin Luther King's life and focus on the ministry portion of his vast skills that he had and impacts that he had on the community. And so I have the privilege of being on that board. And so we all come together. We're doing it right now. We have four rehearsals, and then we do the gig. There's a children's chorus, there's an adult chorus, and then we have different pastors come in and read and talk about his life. And that group, we raise money all year for college scholarships for students that can apply for that. And so we support by giving out, each year we give out approximately four scholarships.
Oh, that's awesome.
Go to college, yeah.
That's awesome.
Life-changing things. The older I get, the more I'm drawn to those kinds of things, because you know the impact that it has on a child's life. And I just feel like that's so important.
So that's awesome. So your kids finish up at the eighth grade at your academy, yeah, and then they go off to public school, I'm assuming?
Yeah, then they can go back to their home school. They can go to another art school. Yes.
But so do you have like an association with someplace like Interlaken that is kind of a 9-12?
I may be working on something like that right now. We just completed our strategic planning, which was great because this is my career. And so we had an outside firm come in and work with our community, our students, our parents, our staff, and partners and arts, different arts groups to really like reimagine our school and just revisit what we're doing and how we're doing it. And so we've just finished the plan. And we're working on formalizing it, getting the graphics together, and it will go to our board for their approval at the end of this month. And then we're going to be rolling forward with a lot of, in my opinion, like really fun things, really like going to work, pulling our bootstraps up and getting some stuff going. We're looking at doing a building project and really moving forward with being intentional with creating that family environment, that sense of community, like you were talking about, with coming together, that's so important. And we really value that. That came out of our strategic plan, that really creating that family-like environment where our families feel connected, our students feel connected, and our staff feel connected.
That sounds incredible. Sounds like you got a lot of cool stuff happening. Believe it or not, we're out of time, kiddo.
Oh, no.
Just barely got started.
Roger, thank you so much. This was such an honor to be talking with you. And thanks for thinking of me and inviting me. And I just, I'm so proud of you.
I am so grateful that you took the time out of your busy life to hang out with an old man like me.
Wow.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Roger.
Bye-bye. I want to thank Maggie for taking the time to come on the show. And thank you, too, for stopping by and listening. When you get a moment, check out my website, www.rogerhumphrey.com. You'll find my blog, tips on how to play guitar and ukulele, a link to my Patreon page where you can listen and download music to over 150 unique arrangements, and more. Thanks again. I hope you'll come back real soon and listen to more episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.